Governor Evers aims to transition to 100% carbon-free electricity over the next 30 years to address the changing climate that is threatening our health, our homes, economy. 2020, of course, is the year of the pandemic, but there were also many climate-related disasters to contend with. Does your community experience repeat flooding? Have wildfires forced you out? What do you want to say about these risks? Conversation right here. It's 800-642-1234. Conversation here, 800-642-1234. Rebecca Hersher is a reporter on NPR Science Desk, where she covers outbreaks, natural disasters, environmental health, and research. She was part of a NPR series called Climate Risk Hits Home. Rebecca, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Well, the pandemic has really sucked up so much oxygen this year, but we also endured these major climate events, and you've reported on rising water. As you scan the country, where are the flooding dangers, especially the water we can't see until it's too late?
Yeah, so there's a lot of flood risk in the U.S., and I think the coasts get a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously the oceans are rising, hurricanes are threatening a lot of people, but I think what doesn't get a lot of attention and should probably get more is flood risk inland. And we see enormous increases in flood risk in the upper Midwest, all along the Mississippi River and its tributaries, and then going east, in part because of extreme rain. And there's a lot more rain falling in very short periods of time, and you see flash flooding. And that includes in Wisconsin. You know, a lot of people probably remember the flooding in 2018, for example, when the rain just didn't stop. That is a really good example of the kind of thing that we're going to see more as the earth gets hotter.
I wonder, as you talk with your science team, have we taken our eye off these climate disasters, or maybe have a more muted response to them to battle this COVID crisis?
I do think for a lot of people, climate risks might not be top of mind this year. And, you know, climate change is a slow burn. It happens over the course of decades. So in any given year, maybe there's something that feels more important. But making sure that you understand your risks, whether it's from flooding or fire or heat waves, and prepare for those, prepare your home for those things, that's really important because it also makes you more resilient when something like a pandemic does come along and makes you more worried about something else, maybe takes your eye off the ball.
Well, when you talk about risk, FEMA compiles, you know, flood insurance rate maps, which show areas with high and moderate to low flood risk. How closely should we look at these maps? How often are they updated?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because I think this is really confusing to a lot of people. So FEMA publishes flood insurance rate maps, as you said. They're used to determine how expensive flood insurance is. But they're also generally used by local planning departments and by individuals, by real estate agents, to show what the flood risk for a given property is. And they're not really designed for that. And so if you're relying on these flood insurance rate maps to understand your risk, you might be missing things. So for example, they don't really capture the total risk, because the rate map has a hard line between areas with flood risk and areas without flood risk. But if you think about water, right, it doesn't stop at a hard line.
No, not
at all. A house or an apartment that's right next to an area with high flood risk, it has some flood risk that maybe isn't captured well by that map. And a lot of these maps are out of date as well. So, you know, these maps are the official maps. They're in some cases the best maps available, but it comes with a big asterisk.
Yeah. So how often are they updated? And explain for us, like, what a 100-year floodplain is versus a 500-year floodplain.
So they're updated on a rotating schedule. In general, places with more flood risk get priority. Mm-hmm. Coastal areas have historically gotten priority. I think we're moving toward a model where inland areas will get updated flood maps more frequently as extreme rain happens. And we talk about a 100-year floodplain, for example. I think that term is really tough for people. What it means is that there is a certain chance, a 1% chance in any given year, that a certain height of water will happen. So a better way to think about it might be, what is the risk that any water will be inside your house over the course of the time you live there? So maybe that's over the course of a 30-year mortgage. And there are better tools available online. So one would be a nonprofit group put out something called Flood Factor. You can look up your risk over the course of your mortgage or over the course of 10 years, let's say, to try to understand how likely it is that water will be inside your home over that period.
We have NPR climate reporter Rebecca Hersher. She's discussing her series on climate change, the risks for floods. Have you ever lost your home or possessions to an extreme storm? What did you learn from that? Are you worried that we're not prepared for future wildfires and floods that may intensify? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead with Rebecca Hersher right here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing climate-related extreme weather events. Here in Wisconsin, extreme weather makes it more difficult to farm. Heavy rain causes erosion and runoff into our waterways, carrying fertilizers, pesticides, lots of other pollutants. Have you lived through an extreme weather event? Conversation is here, 800-642-1234. Rebecca Hersher is a reporter on NPR's Science Desk, and she's with us for the hour. Let's take a call now. Ron is with us from Madison. Hi, Ron.
To answer your question about experience, when I was 7 years old, I helped relatives rescue the neighbor's cattle from a flash flood. More importantly, in the last 49 months, we've heard virtually nothing about the $1 trillion campaign promise to fund infrastructure repair improvements. A very critical part of that is the small watershed projects under Public Law 566. Those projects catch the floodwaters up on the farms in the headwaters area and prevent extreme damage into the towns, villages, cities. We need to do that in Dane County. This week, I've been researching flooding in a different state for a 3-acre parcel. It shows over the next 30 years, like a mortgage life, 99% probability that it will flood. The normal water level is 619. The highest point on the property is 649, but the two government gauges nearby recorded floods of 636 and 646 within the past 6 years.
Yeah. So, Ron, you've certainly done your homework there and bringing up here some really critical issues, Rebecca Hersher, on infrastructure projects that are so critical, small watershed projects, and a backlog of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Wisconsin isn't alone on this. There is a backlog of water infrastructure work that needs to happen all over the country. And as the caller said, you know, it's rural areas, but it's also urban areas that are getting all the runoff from maybe suburban or rural areas around that city center. And if these projects can't catch water, or perhaps there are projects in some places that are older, they aren't catching water as well as they used to, perhaps pipes have collapsed. These need to be upgraded in order to protect urban centers and rural areas from extreme rain. And often the projects of the past weren't designed for the kind of rain that we're seeing now. So that's an added layer.
And of course, to do those projects, it requires a lot of funding and then prioritization of what happens first. As you mentioned, the coasts often have priority there. What does it look like in terms of getting at these projects, specifically for watershed projects in the Biden era, in the Biden administration?
Well, one thing that's coming up in 2021 is that FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, they have a new program that is exactly designed to target this problem, to push money into areas that have not seen investment in water upgrades, water system upgrades, and to try to prioritize projects that protect people from the effects of climate change. And so I think that in the Biden administration, we would be likely to see more money coming. There's already been money set aside by Congress to fund some of these projects.
You have looked at laws in each state surrounding whether flood risk must be disclosed to home buyers and landlords. What have you found?
Well, across the country, there are many, many states where landlords or sellers of homes don't need to tell people who are buying or renting anything about flooding before they move in. So in 21 states, there's no requirement that if you're buying a home, you learn anything about the flood risk of that home. Now, in Wisconsin, if you're buying a house, the seller has to disclose if they know that the house is in an official floodplain. They don't need to tell you if the house has been damaged by a flood in the past, if it's required to have flood insurance, which can be really expensive. And that places Wisconsin in a group of states with pretty weak laws. So compared to states with really strong flood disclosure laws, you're not going to get very much information about flood risk.
We have Rebecca Hersher with us. She's a climate reporter for NPR. We're discussing her reporting on flood risk. You can join in. Do you live in a 100-year or a 500-year floodplain? What is that like? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up ahead with Rebecca Hersher. News update is next on the Ideas Network. We're spending the hour on extreme weather and the risks of climate change. I lived in Louisiana for years, which has a long history, as you know, of major flooding. There are bayous, lakes, waterways all around. And I will never forget March 2016. We had well over 20 inches of rain in less than 3 days. I was a morning edition host. I waded into work. And fortunately, my station didn't take on that much water. Our studio where I was broadcasting was spared. My home was spared, but my neighbors all around me were not. What is your story with floods or wildfires? Conversation here, 800-642-1234. Rebecca Hersher is a reporter on NPR Science Desk, and she's with us for the hour. Rebecca, you're often in the field, as they say in journalism, at the site of a disaster. What do homeowners tell you when everything they have is gone? Do they relocate or do they rebuild?
It's such a good question, and it's so interesting to hear your experience with the flooding in Louisiana in 2016, because a lot of the people that I've spoken to in the last couple of years, they experienced that exact flood or floods like it in other parts of the country, including in the upper Midwest. And a lot of people are torn. They want to rebuild. They have deep roots in the place that they live. Their kids are in school, maybe they work there. Maybe they love their home or they live near family. And so they want to rebuild and they want to stay where they are, but they're torn because they're not sure, will it happen again? And so that's where having a really good understanding of future risk and what climate change means for the place that you live is so important, because it allows you to make decisions that make sense, that protect you and your family.
Let's bring in Marcus now in Milwaukee. Marcus, what are your thoughts?
Good morning. So I feel we need to have a paradigm shift in our mentality and start like just approaching this from a more pragmatic viewpoint. Like we need to stop paving over so much stuff. We need to start creating more like rain gardens and just local solutions so that we don't create larger problems for downstream, you know, our neighbors downstream. We need to realize the interconnectedness of where we send water up here affects what gets flooded down in Louisiana. It's just that simple. And, you know, we just really need to take a step back and start going, what can we do at a local level? Because a little bit from everybody will make a big difference. That being said, I just want to say I'm not affiliated with the station. I realize for everyone out there that this has been a really rough year with COVID and everything else. But if you love NPR like I do, like if you love like public radio, please like donate because, you know, like, again, light hands make or many hands make for light work.
Oh, Marcus, thank you for that. And thank you for listening. Rebecca, you know, Marcus is saying that it's local solutions and, you know, so what you do here affects people downstream. And that couldn't be more true because, you know, I mean, as I could see, everything ends up in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so glad that Marcus brought up the need to stop paving so much, because that is something that scientists and urban planners and the federal government says is a priority, making sure that there are fewer impervious surfaces as we continue to build and invest, especially in urban centers. And, you know, you mentioned earlier this hour, and I just really want to put a fine point on it. Urban flooding is a huge problem. You know, when there is a large amount of rain in an urban area with a lot of paved surfaces, the water has nowhere to go. You know, usually stormwater is underneath roadways, even underneath homes. And when those pipes underneath the ground fill up, the water, it can get into sewer systems. It can come down the street in a flash flood and wash away cars, even wash away buildings, wash away people. It can be really dangerous. And flooding is one of the top killers associated with climate change. I think a lot of people don't know that. It feels like maybe flooding would be like slow moving water coming higher and higher. But flash flooding from extreme rain, especially in urban areas, is really dangerous. And so understanding that, and understanding that even if you can't see a river, you can't see a lake from your house, you might still be at risk. And you would want to know that.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Rebecca Hersher, a climate reporter with NPR. We're discussing how to be better informed about flood risk. We're also going to be talking here about wildfires. Rebecca, I want to switch gears here and look at what has happened with wildfires. The U.S. Forest Service released new maps this year showing which parts of the country have a higher risk. What are you seeing in this area?
Well, first of all, if you look at these maps, you're going to see, I think, what everyone would expect to see, which is really, really high risk in the western U.S. There are some spots that I think most Americans don't know about that have rising fire risk. The southeast really comes to mind. Luckily, Wisconsin has relatively low fire risk compared to the places that are real hot spots, and that is good news. That said, the time of year when Wisconsin has the highest wildfire risk is the spring, especially if the spring is dry, which can happen. And so most fires are started by people. And it's really important to remember that with more variable weather patterns as the climate changes, making sure that you're doing really basic stuff to not start fires when there's a lot of dry fuel around is really important.
You said that, you know, there aren't that many protections for disclosure on flood risk for homeowners. What about wildfire risk? What is disclosed there for new homeowners?
So across the country, there's a lot less information disclosed about wildfires than about floods. So only two states, California and Oregon, require any disclosure of wildfire risk. And as we saw this year, you know, a lot of people in those states are living in places that are really prone to wildfire. But there are a lot of people living in other states that are equally prone to wildfire that aren't getting any kind of information when they move into a new house or new apartment. And that's true in Wisconsin as well, which is, you know, not surprising. Wisconsin has relatively low wildfire risk compared to other states. But it means that if you do live in an area, maybe a wooded area, you're not going to get a reminder about this threat when you move into your new house.
About a third of people rent their homes, and you've looked at people of color who are more likely to rent and discriminatory housing practices. What do you see there in terms of risk, whether it's flood or wildfires?
Especially for flooding, when we talk about areas in the middle of the country and also on the coast, people of color who are renting are at much higher risk for damage to their family and to their finances after a flood. So families who rent, as we discussed, less likely to get information about flooding when they move in to their apartment. Most places don't require the landlord disclose anything about flood risk, even if the apartment has flooded before. Often first floor or basement apartments that are below street level are cheaper. So you have people and families who have less money to fall back on if a disaster were to happen, living in some of the highest risk spaces. And as we just talked about, you know, urban flooding is a huge problem. So it's not going to be obvious that that risk is there. And we see this, you know, Milwaukee, for example, a higher proportion of people there rent than other parts of the state. It's been hit really hard by climate-driven rain. And the people who are going to get hit hardest are people who are renting who don't have a lot of savings.
Where does insurance come in here? How do you know if you need flood insurance?
It's such a good question. And we actually, I can't help but plug this. We do have a list of questions that you should ask before you move to a new place. And it includes a lot of questions about flooding. You can find it on NPR's website. But some of those questions are, has this building flooded before? You can ask the person who is selling or even the person who is leaving, the previous renter, if you ever meet them, do you have flood insurance? How much did it cost? Because a place that's really high risk for flooding, you might be required to buy flood insurance for that if you're buying it, if you have a mortgage. And you're going to want to know that because flood insurance can be quite expensive if you're living in a high risk area. And if it's that expensive, maybe you want to reconsider moving there in the first place. So you can look at those FEMA flood insurance rate maps for a better idea of how much flood insurance might cost or whether you would be required to buy it. But really talking to people in the neighborhood is the best way to get a sense of how much flood insurance is costing in the area and whether you are going to want to have it, whether or not you're in an area that requires you to have it.
If your neighbors have it but aren't required to have it, that to me should sound some alarm bells.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it certainly means that you would not want to live in that area probably without flood insurance, right?
Yeah.
But remember, in a lot of places, your seller is not going to tell you that. Your realtor is not going to tell you that. And your insurance agent doesn't need to tell you that. They may not know. So it's really up to you, at least the way policies are set up right now, to seek out this information, to ask smart questions, and to make sure that you have the insurance you need.
So as you cover these disasters, I'm wondering, what are you watching for out of FEMA?
You know, there has been a long, long push to reform the way flood insurance is administered in this country. And FEMA actually is the agency that oversees flood insurance. The vast majority of residential flood insurance policies come from the federal government, which means they're backed up by taxpayers. So as we see more extreme rain, as we see more hurricanes, we are seeing the taxpayer end up footing this enormous bill for all the damage and destruction from that flooding. And so I think a lot of people are looking to Congress. Maybe this will be the year, 2021, when Congress overhauls that system, maybe gets rid of those hard lines between areas that have flood risk and don't have flood risk, and instead publishes maps and guidance that make it a lot clearer what the flood risk is, price that flood risk appropriately, and help people be prepared.
Rebecca, thank you for joining us, and thank you for your reporting.
Thanks so much. This was really fun.
Rebecca Hersher is a reporter on NPR Science Desk, and she was part of a series called Climate Risk Hits Home. We have a link at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Stay with us on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.